guys. Time once again for my movie review show, Flickers of Fear. Now, a couple weeks back, probably 2 or 3 weeks ago, I reviewed a monster movie, Korean monster movie, called The Host from 2006, which was directed by Bong Joon-ho, who, as I said, was kind of, you know, people that were into horror movies or indie movies or Asian films knew his name, obviously, because he's done a bunch of films, but he came to sort of worldwide acclaim after winning the Oscar in 2019, I believe it was, or 2020, for Parasite, which is indeed a brilliant film. Now, when I did the review for The Host, somebody in the comments said, oh, you should totally do a review of Memories of Murder, the movie that he made before The Host in 2003, and I had seen it previously and had been wanting to get around to it, so I said, I absolutely will do that, and then I noticed that it was on Hulu, so I figured might as well do it sooner rather than later, because I had been wanting to rewatch it anyway. So this was Bong Joon-ho's second film. As I said, it came out in 2003. His first one was called Barking Dogs Never Bite, which I still haven't seen yet, although I think Shudder might have it. But so this movie is actually based on a true story, loosely. Well, actually not really all that loosely. The case that it was based on, I can't remember. I think we might have done an episode about it. Either that, or I wrote about it in one of my Faceless Villain books. Maybe both. It's possible I did both, because the details of it were very, very familiar to me. So this is based on what is essentially, you know, Korea's first set of serial murders, the Hwaseong murders. And they took place from 1986 to 1991. So this film is like a dramatization of that, although it's sort of... It's not necessarily like a straightforward police procedural, because at the time that the movie came out, the person who was responsible for these crimes had not been caught, and nobody knew who he was. He was actually caught later on. I'll get into that in the end, because I actually didn't know this until I was like rewatching this movie. But yeah, he has been caught now. So in this movie, as I said, it's sort of like, I've seen it compared a lot to David Fincher's Zodiac, in the sense that it's a movie that was based on a real case that was unsolved, and so it was left sort of open-ended, and it had to concentrate more on the investigation and on the effects on the people that were, you know, investigating the case. And that's kind of what this one does too, although this one takes a slightly different approach, I feel like. So what you have two detectives, Detective Park, who is kind of like, it's this very small town where these murders first start happening. Like, the first murder that they find, it's this woman, and she's been, you know, bound and gagged, she's been raped and strangled, and, you know, you're led to believe this is a very small town, this is something that doesn't happen, or has never happened before, and the local police force seemed very ill-equipped to deal with it. Now, as I said, the first part of this film is set in 1986, because that's when the first of the murders was discovered. So this sort of small town, you know, and it's very funny, like, even at the beginning, it almost has an element... I don't want to like oversell this too much, but it almost has an element of black comedy to it, just in the way that the police force are so inept, because they're just completely out of their depth, you can tell, and the methods that they have for solving things, they seem like they don't take it all that seriously, and it's not really played for laughs, but it is kind of like sadly, I mean, he is definitely making like a satirical commentary about this time period in Korean law enforcement. And obviously, you know, this small town, they didn't have all the forensic investigation techniques that we have nowadays. But just so much that, like I said, they, you know, they'd never seen a serial killer before, nothing of this magnitude, and they really had no idea what they were doing. So, you know, the first crime scene, like, you can tell right out of the gate that these cops just have no idea what they're doing. It's like they're running all over the crime scene. They're not taking pictures. Everyone's just kind of doing their own thing and not, you know, cordoning anything off or anything like that. They find a footprint, which they presume is from the killer, up on the road, but then, like, a guy in a tractor happens to drive by and runs it over, so they don't get, you know, any evidence from that. So you have these, two main investigators that are working on it. Detective Park seems like this sort of like laid back. He's very much a gut instinct, small town kind of guy. He's like, you know, you don't know all the locals around here, you know, things like that. And he's very much one of those people, he says that he has shaman eyes, in that he can just like look into someone's eyes and know whether they're guilty or not. He's also very kind of like superstitious, which you get into later on. And he's partnered with this guy, Cho, who basically his whole investigative technique is just, well, we'll find somebody that we think did it, and then we'll just beat the crap out of them until they confess to it, and then one and done. You know what I mean? So, and, you know, Park is a little bit like that, too. Like, nobody really seems to have that much of a problem with beating confessions out of people. Like, it's not really seen as anything that's that unusual. So you have these two guys. There's a couple of murders. So they find one and then they find another one, like not too long later, at which point another detective is sent from Seoul, you know, the big city, to help them out, because obviously they're just kind of like, they have no idea what they're doing. And this is something that has never been seen before. So the funny thing is, too, is that as soon as the detective from Seoul comes in, Detective Seo, he's walking into town and he asks this, like, there's this woman also walking, and she, as you would, like, thinks he's the killer, because, like I said, there's a big panic in the town now because two women have turned up dead. So she thinks this dude is following her and, like, freaks out, and he's like, no, I'm just asking for directions. And she wigs out, falls into a ditch, and then he goes down there. He's like, seriously, I'm not. It's like, you know what I, you know. And then, like, the other cops come and, like, beat the crap out of him. He's like, no, I'm a detective. Like, I came from Seoul. So you know what I mean? So it's that kind of thing. So as soon as Detective Seo arrives, there is immediately a conflict. Like I said, he's a big city guy. These other two are kind of like, we know all the locals. We're going to know the person when we pick him up just by looking at them, or we're just going to beat the crap out of him and then it'll solve everything. Whereas Seo is very much, you know, more like a modern investigator would be, in the sense that he's very science-based. It's like, no, we need evidence. You know, we can't just go around beating the crap out of people and, you know, we have to do everything correctly and get some actual evidence. What actually ends up happening is that they pick up, the first suspect they pick up is like this mentally challenged kid. They keep calling him a boy, but he doesn't really look that young. I'm not really sure how young he's supposed to be. But they pick him up and they question him. And you can tell, I mean, he's clearly like not all there, you know what I mean? And he does seem to know some details about the crime, like when they interrogate him, but the detectives are also asking him like really leading questions, and they basically keep him for like 3 or 4 days or something like that without charging him. And because he's, you know, handicapped, he can't really, you know, protest about it or anything like that. Like, his dad comes to protest, but there's not really much he can do about it. They also kind of, you know, rough him up and shit like that as well. Now, they do kind of take him to the crime scene, and he does seem to know a lot about it, but he keeps saying that it's like it was a dream, right? So they're convinced, well, this is the guy, you know, this is the killer. He was seen like following around like one of the first victims. And so it's got to be him. All we need to do is just beat the crap out of him until he confesses to it. Problem being, though, that one thing that Seo notices is that this suspect has kind of like webbed fingers. And he said, well, this person could obviously not have done these murders because the knots that were tied like to strangle the women, and like many of them were left with like girdles or underwear or whatever, like on their faces, or were like knotted up and hogtied. And he said the knots in there were very complicated, and it's like somebody with webbed fingers would not have been able to pull that off. So this can't be the guy. So Park and Cho are very upset by this because I guess they were having a good time like beating the crap out of this mentally challenged man. So they had to let him go. But one thing Seo figures out is that there have been two murders, but he says, no, there's got to be a third one because this woman that lived around here, she went missing like 2 months ago and we haven't found her body yet. So I'm sure there's three victims at this point, and he does turn out to be right. He also notices a couple of other connections that the dumbass detectives have not noticed, in that the murders always take place on rainy nights, and at least the first two or three victims were wearing red. So he does notice that connection. So at this point, so they have to let the first suspect go. Another thing that's really interesting about this movie is that there's also a female detective, and she's actually used as a decoy at one point. Like, she puts on a red dress and she walks like through the streets like on a rainy night by herself, like hoping to bait the killer. But it turns out the killer kills someone else that night. But the thing about it, and I guess this is set in 1986, and it's also kind of making like a little bit of a satirical jab at these, you know, bumbling male detectives who are very, I mean, they're very, very like overtly like hyper-masculine. Everything is like gut instinct. They almost kind of like think it's maybe, I don't want to go so far as to say they maybe think it's like effeminate to like follow the book or follow the rules or, you know, use science like to solve crimes. They're just like, no, it's all about gut and like beating the crap out of people. But the female detective actually comes up with like another really good connection saying, you know, every night that the, you know, I listen to this radio program at night, and every night that the killer has struck, they played this particular song, which is like a kind of a rare song. They don't usually play it. Otherwise, it's called The Sad Letter. It's like, and they always say that somebody requested it. Like they sent in a postcard and requested it. So it's like, maybe we should call the radio station and see who sent that postcard, because the postcard says something like, you know, play this song on a rainy night or something like that, which seems super suspicious. So she says that like to the chief and CO, and they're like, oh shit, that's like a good idea. Whereas Park and Cho are just like, that's the stupidest fucking thing I've ever heard and everything like that. And their whole thing is, well, because we never found any pubic hairs at any of the, you know, rape and murder scenes, that must mean that the killer doesn't have any pubic hair. So they go off on this. So they're thinking maybe it's a monk, or, you know, Park at one point goes to this like sauna, is like looking at everybody's junk and stuff like that. So these dudes are like kind of idiots, you know what I mean? And there's another thing too, where like at the next point, like when they're looking for another suspect, so they do that, but it turns out that the radio station has thrown the postcard away. So they have to kind of keep going back and like, you know, hope that another postcard comes in and they can find out where the postcard came from. Now at this point, because Park is so frustrated, he goes to essentially a shaman who sells him this little scroll and is like, yeah, you have to go out to like the last crime scene and do this like elaborate like paranormal ritual, and you pour this stuff on there and it'll show you the face of the killer. It's just like ridiculous. So him and Cho actually believe this is gonna work, and they actually go out to the crime scene to do it. And it turns out too that CO has had the same idea, not about doing the shaman spell or anything, but he wants to go back out to the crime scene to see if the killer's going to return. Now, while both of them are out there, like they're kind of on either side of this road, like with these little kind of like woods and everything, this guy actually does come walking into the woods. And he's acting like super, super suspicious. Like he pulls out like this woman's, you know, panties and bra, and he puts them down on the ground, like organizes them. And then like he pulls his own pants down, and he has like women's like red underwear on. And so he starts like jerking it. So they're like, well, this has obviously got to be the killer. I mean, that's super, super fishy. So they all kind of like jump and converge, and the dude runs away. Now they end up finding him, like he runs and runs, and there's like a big long chase, and he runs into this like building site where there's, you know, hundreds of dudes that are dressed in the same kind of clothes that he had, but they do actually find him when he like leans over and they see the back of his red underwear. So they bring him in, and it turns out that maybe, and like I said, because the real crime had not been solved at the time that this movie was made, you're not going to find out who the killer is. It's not that kind of like murder mystery. So don't think that it's going to be like all solved at the end, like a Hollywood mystery thriller, because it's not. It's left completely ambiguous. Maybe one of the suspects they picked up actually was the killer. Maybe not. Like you don't really know. And they didn't know. The movie is kind of like, it's not really about that. It's kind of like about sort of like the clash between the different styles of investigation, the personalities, and also kind of how the frustration of the investigation like changed people into maybe, you know, something that they are not all that happy about. So we'll get into that too. So they bring this guy in, and it seems that this guy is probably not the killer, in the sense that everyone thinks he's lovely, and he's like, basically, I just have a weird fetish about the crimes, and it's like reading about them kind of turned me on. He's like, I know it's messed up, but he's like, so I wanted to go out to the crime scene and like kind of relive it. He's like, I didn't do it, but so they have to let that guy go, because as it turns out, CO is off doing some other investigation. Like he heard this story from these two schoolgirls about like this weird person that like lived by the bathrooms like out behind the school, and he goes to check that lead out. And when he's there, like, he runs into this woman, and she says, you know, there's this other woman that lives up there by herself, like, you know, on the hill, like, overlooking the school, and it's like, she's just, like, up there crying all the time, and it seemed, like, super strange, so you might want to check that out. So he goes and interviews that woman, and it turns out that she was attacked by, you're led to believe, the same killer, but she survived, and she didn't see his face, but she says to him, She says, but I do remember, like, that his hands were really, really soft, like a woman's hands. So when Sio comes back and they're interrogating, you know, the woods masturbator guy, like the red panties guy, Sio looks at that dude's hands and they're all, like, rough and fucked up. He's like, this guy's gonna just, you know, cut him down because they were hanging him upside down from the ceiling. Like I said, they're essentially, like, torturing these suspects into confessing. And they'll do it for a long time until the people are just like, yeah, whatever. I just want to go home. I'll sign whatever you want. So he's like, well, this isn't him. You know, I had a victim and, it's, you know, she says that the hands were soft. Now, they also find, like, a couple of the newer... It seems like the killer is escalating because some of the latest victims, like, have things inserted into their vaginas. Like, one of them has, like, pieces of peach in there. And then, like, one of the later on ones has kind of, like, cutlery, like a knife and fork and stuff like that, like, crammed up in there. So that's, like, pretty fucked up. Now, eventually, the radio station lead does pan out. And they are able to find one of the postcards requesting that weird song, the sad letter, and they find an address. So they go and find this dude. And this dude is named Park Hyun-gyu. And he works in a factory, but he works in the office. And he has super, super soft hands. So they bring him in. The way they question him, like I said, it's left very ambiguous as to whether this is the killer or not. So there's kind of like a big confrontation at this point where Cho, who, like I said, is the guy that just wants to like beat everyone's ass until they confess, they're so sure that they finally got him because this is the guy that supposedly sent the postcards. And it seemed too much of a coincidence that the postcards asked to play this particular song on nights that it was raining. And those indeed were all the nights that the killer, struck. Then they're just like, well, all we have to do is just, again, beat the crap out of him, you know, until he confesses. Now, that doesn't really work out. I mean, he's kind of like very stoic and he's just kind of like, no, it wasn't me. And, you know, he's acting kind of sketch, but like I said, it could go either way. And at this point, Sio and Detective Park has kind of come to the conclusion. He's like, maybe this whole beating people up is like not really working out, because he's had a couple of things where his shaman vision, like where he's just looking and like determining if people are guilty, he's kind of come to the realization that that's not really working out for him. You know what I mean? So he actually does like grow somewhat, and he's starting to come more over to Sio's side. Like, maybe we need more scientific evidence. And then they go back to the first suspect that they had, like the mentally challenged boy. Sio was like, I thought you had just like coached him into those answers. And Park was like, no, I didn't. But then they figure out, they're like, well, he acted like he said he didn't do it. Like, but he kept saying it was a dream. They're like, but you know what? Maybe he saw it. That's why he remembered it so well. So they actually try to go and find that kid again. And when they go there, it's like Cho, who has been reprimanded for beating the crap out of yet another suspect. He's drunk at this restaurant where the suspect's dad runs it. And he just gets fucking ragey and he starts like beating the crap. He smashes the TV and starts beating the crap out. It just causes this big fucking riot, essentially. At which point the suspect comes in and he starts hitting Cho because, you know, for revenge, I guess, because they beat the shit out of him, and ends up like hitting him in the leg, like with a stick, but it has like a big long nail at the end. So it like punctures his leg. So at this point, like Park and Sio are just kind of like, man, fuck him. He's drunk and he's just beating the crap out of everybody. So they run after the suspect. And obviously the suspect is, whose name is Baek, I think. And he is completely terrified, understandably, because these cops beat the crap out of him for many days, like to try to get him to confess to something that he probably didn't do. And so they're like, no, 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 we don't want to like arrest you or anything. We're just going to say, you know, the murders, did you see them? And then, you know, he says, yeah, I saw him and I saw the killer. He's like, I saw it was raining that night and I saw his face. He's like three times because the lightning kept lighting up his face. So I saw what he looked like. And at this point, Sio has a picture of the latest suspect that they have, Hyun-gyu, and he pretty much like shoves it into this kid's face. He's like, is this him? Is this him? And at which point, like, Baek is like, just starts like wigging it and losing it and doesn't really identify him. He just starts talking about his scarred face and how maybe it was his dad that threw him in a fire, and it was this whole other thing. And then he runs off, and he ends up getting hit by a train, like, accidentally, because they're chasing him. And so there goes their only witness who saw what the killer actually looked like. It turns out, too, that Cho, who got hit in the leg with the nail, He didn't go to the hospital right away, even though everyone told him to. And it turns out he got tetanus, and they're going to have to, like, amputate his leg. So there's that. So that's kind of like, it's almost kind of like he got, those were like his just desserts, I guess, for thinking that he could solve everything with violence. And it ended up costing him his leg below the knee. Meanwhile, one of the investigators, like the forensic team, as I said, this is 1986 to 1991, so they didn't really have very good DNA technology, but they have discovered that one of the bodies has some semen, like, on the clothing. And at the time in Korea, they didn't have the technology to, do a DNA profile. So they said, we're going to have to send it to America. In the real case, they actually did have to send it. They sent it to Japan. But, you know, in the movie, I guess, like, for a longer thing. So like, we have to send it to America to get the DNA results. Meanwhile, this latest suspect, Hyung-gyu, they are so convinced that this is who it is because he was the guy that, sent the postcards and he's, like, super fishy. They're like, okay, well, we have to wait until the DNA comes back. When the DNA comes back, it'll prove that it's him and we'll have solved the case. But meanwhile, we have to let him go, so we have to just, like, follow him. So they put, like, a 24/7 tail on him. So sadly, though, Seo is watching him one night. Like, he's at a little cafe or whatever. And Seo, who has been, I mean, presumably these cops have been, like, frustrated and, like, working on this case forever, and it's just dead end after dead end, and they're just getting so, they're getting to the point where Seo is just kind of like, maybe we should just beat the crap out of him, you know what I mean? So he's more coming around to violence just because he's so frustrated that he can't solve it. So he actually ends up falling asleep in his car on the watch. When he wakes up, he sees that the suspect, Hyung-gyu, has got on a bus, and his car won't start. He can't, follow him, and he's just like, shit. So he tries to figure out where the guy went. It's raining that night. They hear, like, the song on the radio, and they're like, holy shit, like, something's gonna happen. And it does end up that even though you don't know if Hyung-gyu did it, you just see him, like, on the bus. He doesn't get off by his house. They don't, like, know where he got off. And another girl does get killed that night, and it turns out to be one of the schoolgirls that Seo was talking to earlier, like, in regards to the bathroom behind the school. She ends up getting murdered. And at this point, Seo has lost it, because this is a victim. He knows her. He has talked to her in the course of the investigation. She's, still a schoolgirl. And he just, like, loses any civility or any kind of, like, sop to scientific evidence that he had. He's like, I just want to kill this motherfucker because I'm sure that it's him. And that's how it's going to go. So he basically, like, goes, and there's this really great scene, like, toward the end of the movie where he goes and just, like, he's like, look, I'm just going to shoot you. Just tell me that you did it. I want to look in your face. And he, and, you know, the suspect is just, like, kind of looking at him, and he's like, yeah, I killed them all. He's like, that's what you want to hear, isn't it? And then it turns out that, like, as he's beating the crap out of this dude, like, on a, railroad track or whatever, Park runs up and said, hey, we got the DNA result. So they open the envelope right there, like, while the dude is right there handcuffed, and the DNA results are inconclusive, meaning it's probably not that guy, but it still maybe could be, because I guess it wasn't a big enough sample. But like I said, they couldn't determine, like, whether this was it or not. And at this point, again, like, Seo just loses. He's like, I don't give a shit. I don't need the documents. And that's kind of like going back to what he said earlier. It's like, documents don't lie. So he was very much a by the book, very much, we need solid evidence. And now he's just like, fuck it. I don't care what that says. I know that you did it, and I'm just going to fucking kill you, like, right now. So he just throws the paper away and is basically going to shoot the guy. But actually Park steps in and stops him again. So it's almost kind of like a complete role reversal. These two, like, Park was the guy that was all gut before. He's like, yeah, we just need to look at people's eyes and we can figure out if they're guilty and stuff. And he actually does that. He, like, looks at the dude for, like, a really long time. And then he realizes, he's like, I can't tell. I can't tell if this person is guilty or not. So then, basically he gets away, like, Seo shoots at him, but misses. So he just runs away, like, through the thing, and they let him go. And then we jump ahead to 2003, which was contemporaneous when the movie was made. And Park has quit the force, which was what his girlfriend wanted him to do, because she's like, look, this kind of shit is killing you. This isn't great. You probably shouldn't do this anymore. So he's quit, and now he's kind of like a salesman. So he goes around, selling. It's kind of like a juicer type situation. And he's married his girlfriend. They have a couple of kids. It's been several years. And while he's out on a run with some of his products, he sees the kind of road or the area where the first body was found way back in 1986. So he tells the driver, he's like, stop, I kind of want to, look and, like, you know, check it out. So he goes over there, like, it's sort of like this culvert type thing, like a ditch with a little concrete thing over it. And so he goes over there and kind of, like, leans down and looks in there. And obviously there's nothing in there because it was a long time ago. While he's leaning down to look at it, this little girl, this little schoolgirl walks by and she's like, "Wait, you know, what are you doing, mister?" And he says, "Oh, I was just, you know, looking in here." And she's like, "Is there anything in there?" And he's like, "No, nothing." She's like, "That's really weird because a little while ago, there was another guy here looking into that culvert." She said, and I asked him the same question, like, "What are you doing? Why are you looking in there?" And she says, "He told me that he did something there a long time ago and he just wanted to, like, check it out." At this point, Park realizes that must have been the killer, like, this many years later, revisiting the scene of the crime. So even though he's not a cop anymore, like, he asks the little girl, "What'd she look like? What did he look like?" And she's like, "Well," she's like, "he just looked plain. She's like, ordinary. Like, there was nothing about him that was, like, particularly notable." And at this point, there's a great ending shot where Park basically just, like, looks right into the camera and just, like, stares. And there's a couple different interpretations of this final scene, but I think that that Bong Joon-ho actually meant this. He's using his shaman eyes particularly to look out into the audience, because if you remember, at the time that this movie was made, the serial killer in Hwa Seong had not been caught. So it's very possible, because this movie was massively popular in Korea, you know, and millions of people saw it, it's very possible that the killer saw it too, and that Park was staring into the eyes of the killer, you know, trying to find out who it was. So, as I said, this movie, it's, if you're looking for kind of like a standard, like I said, Hollywood-style mystery thriller where everything is solved at the end, that's not what you're going to get. This is much more, even though it's not exactly the same, but it does have some parallels with David Fincher's Zodiac in the sense that it's based on a real case that was unsolved. And so it's mostly focusing on, like, other thematic elements rather than the solution of the mystery. So some people, if you kind of like a cut and dried sort of narrative, then this might just frustrate you because it's just, you know, it's dead end after dead end. It's much more like a real police investigation where you have this lead and it's like, oh, this seems really promising, and then it turns out to fizzle out, or it doesn't really go anywhere, or, you know, things are just left hanging, because that's kind of what reality is like. But in that sense, I think this is actually one of the most brilliant detective thriller mystery movies ever made because of that, because of its realism. So the real case, as I mentioned, that this was based on, happened in Hwa Seong between 1986 and 1991. We might have covered it on the show, and or I might have covered it in one of my Faceless Villain books. It was 10 women that were killed in the area, pretty much in the way that you see in the film. And for a long time, the killer was not caught. And there had been, I believe there was a play, like, written about it, I think, called Come to See Me. And the guy that wrote that, like, the playwright behind that, like, helped Bong Joon-ho, like, write the screenplay for this. So they kind of collaborated on that as well. And so essentially what ended up happening was that DNA actually did end up catching the person that did this many years later. In 2019, they actually matched the DNA on one of the victims, I believe, to a dude named Lee Chun Jae, or Jai. Who was in his 50s at the time that they caught him. And he was actually in prison for something else. He was actually in prison for raping and murdering his sister-in-law in Busan. So he was already serving a life sentence in prison, but they ended up matching his DNA to some of the victims of the Hwa Seong serial killer case. Although he initially denied involvement, later on he did actually confess to 14 murders, including the 10 having to do with the Hwa Seong serial killer case. He couldn't be tried in a lot of those because Korea has a statute of limitations on murder, which is crazy because we don't. But so most of the cases had, you know, the statute of limitations had run out, so he couldn't be charged for those. But he was already in prison for another murder that he had done that didn't have anything to do with those. But he did eventually confess to those, so they actually have caught him now. So that's what's kind of interesting, too, is that Bong Joon-ho said that one of the things that spurred him to make this film initially, like when the killer had not been caught yet, was that he was very curious to, like, look into this person's face. That's kind of why the whole shaman eyes thing, like, came about. And so I thought it was interesting. I'm like, well, now you can. You can go on the Wikipedia page and you can look at the dude's face. And indeed, he does just look like a very ordinary human being, as many serial killers do, which is what is so scary about them. So yeah, if you really liked any of Bong Joon-ho's other films, like I said, if you liked The Host, if you liked Parasite, which I kind of feel like are probably his best known ones or his most widely seen ones, definitely go back and give this one a watch, especially if you like kind of not necessarily police procedurals, mystery thrillers types. If you like Zodiac, if you like something like that that's sort of based on a true story, then I think this will really, really be right up your alley. It's, as I said, it almost has like a strange, like dark comedy element to it, at least in the beginning, just because it's sort of poking satirical fun at how bumbling the cops were, how out of their depth they were, like, dealing with this magnitude of crime. And back in the 80s, they didn't have all the forensic technology, and they didn't really know what they were doing. They didn't seem to take it all that seriously. And so it's kind of making, it's kind of using the black comedy in service to that satire. So it's kind of like that. But it's definitely one of the best Korean films ever made. This one and I Saw the Devil are probably two of my favorite Korean films ever. They're completely different, but I mean, this one is just, it's just brilliant. Every single thing about it is brilliant. Like all of the, you know, interactions between the characters, the clash between the different investigative styles, the way that this frustration with the case is frustration that it's not going anywhere. And he's just, you know, CO in particular, who started out as this very by the book scientific evidence type of guy. And then he gets to a point too, where he's just so frustrated and beaten down by this, the lack of progress, that he just turns into his own worst enemy. Like he starts, you know, being violent just like the other ones, even though he knows that that doesn't work. And he just lets his frustration and emotion get the better of him. It's just a really good examination of the personalities behind that and what that type of investigative work might do to you, due to your moral compass, for example. But yeah, this is, if you have Hulu, it's actually on Hulu at the moment. I'm sure you can probably stream it other places as well. But I mean, anything, if you like anything like this, like murder mysteries, South Korean films, anything like that, and you haven't seen it, then you really do need to owe yourself to see it, because it's a great, great film. And it's just, I love it. And I really, really loved like getting to revisit it. So that will do it for this Flickers of Fear. I will see you guys on the next one. Bye.